Members, members, I've started the recording of the meeting. You may have noticed the chairman isn't present this evening. So the first item of business tonight is to elect a chair from the floor. May I remind you that protocol for this meeting is it's chaired by an opposition member. Do I have any nominations?
I propose Councillor James.
Seconded? Seconded. Any further nominations? Carried? Councillor James in the chair then, please. Welcome, Chairman. Welcome, Chairman.
Thank you. first item, the minutes on the 25th. Is everyone happy that I've signed those?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Secondly, apologies.
Thank you, Chairman. Apologies received from Councillor Dodson, who is substituted by Councillor Roy James, and Councillor Loughran, who is substituted by Councillor Anne Hobbs.
Thank you. And moving on to officers' reports, starting with statement of accounts, item 3 alpha. Over to you, sir.
Statement of accounts is presented before you. Quite a lengthy document to show the financial outcome of the position of the council. I think it's important to note the amount of work that was put in by officers, led by Emma and Lisa and the finance team, and everyone coming together. It was a significant improvement in previous year's preparation in terms of the timeline, with the delay largely being driven by our valuers being able to deliver the valuations in a timely fashion rather than the team getting the accounts together. Emma and the team are looking to try and address that for next year, but there are some changes around that coming forward, so we'll have to look at what that means for us in terms of the viability of being able to deliver it on time. Fees, again, we've got the usual thing around a lack of resource within the team and struggling to fill vacancies. We are going out to hire again to see if we can bring some people in to fill those posts. That would obviously take some pressure off Emma and enable us to do more around this. But as it stands, we've been unsuccessful numerous times bringing people into the team. It's a very, very difficult market and it will continue to be so. And it's likely to continue to get worse, if anything, over the next couple of years. We've had additional people leave our team over the last month, and another two people leaving. So, seat about for one of them, but the other one, nothing as yet. So we really are getting, it's getting very, very difficult to say the least. I don't propose to work through the accounts in any fashion because they are as stated, but I don't know if there's any questions from the members or anything.
Chair, I was going to ask a question. It's just about the regeneration, the use of government grants and the planning regeneration.
What page?
Oh, sorry, that is page 15 and 16.
Yes.
Just from the, exactly how many sheds do you have in regeneration? Or
it's behind the initial profile of the program. We were ambitious with that, but we weren't, because this is a backward looking document. At the point of time we do this, we thought we'd have all the demolition work done in the year being listed. But as you can see now, most of it has been completed. So it's behind our own triple test, wasn't it, at the time?
So are we catching up now?
As it stands, I believe that we are on track with our current plans. But if it's something this big and complex, I'd have to speak to you to like break. This is definitely backwards looking.
Because the other thing was worried about, like the risk register. We would have had a risk of knocking the buildings down. Just wondering now if that risk is going down because we knocked something to get down. Because the risk would have been like finding something, pollution of some kind or something. That was another question.
So that risk will be reducing, you're right, as we fit out things like asbestos or any kind of issues we've had around utility disconnection. We'll have a new risk starting to emerge, which is what we're going to do with these empty sites. So that will be the new risk. Sadly, you never get to get rid of all your risks.
Yeah. But it's probably less to worry about.
Yeah, it is. At this point, we understand the sites that we've worked on and largely cleared. I had a walk around it earlier today with the head of assurance just to go see where we are. The co-op site is quite impressive in terms of the scale and the clearance that's taking place. But much like you, I need to understand how the frontage has been left and the access point and some of the canopy appears to be left from the old guild hall.
Yeah.
So I'm missing a substitute, but I'm sure there'll be updates about that shortly.
Okay.
Lorraine.
I just noticed that paragraph 512 is exactly the same as 3.3, so I don't know if it's normal.
What page, Karine?
6 and 4, 3.3 and 6.4.5.12, due to the time required to repeat assurance levels and return to normal. Because when I read 512, I said,
are we talking about the key issues or the details?
No, I think it's a printing issue. It just said exactly the same.
Look at that. Oh, I see. Okay. So we have carried it down. One is from the key issues, we just carried the same paragraph down.
Okay, okay.
Yeah.
Any further questions on item 3 alpha?
I've got a question. When you say in paragraph 5.4, it is likely that many audit opinions will be classed as modified or disclaimed audit opinions due to the time limitation imposed by the introduction of the next of days. But I think now we are on time.
We haven't had a, we haven't completed our audits,
yeah.
And the accounts were a little late than we would have liked them to be in terms of the deadlines. So we are using the backstop legislation. We will get the opinion, but we haven't completed the audits or anything. So yeah. We're not up to date as yet.
For this year, but for next year it should be okay.
No, we're not going to get the audits done either next year. It's I think we're going to be discussing
that
later.
Yeah, but I'm just, I don't understand why, but.
It's the amount of assurance of what we have to do because there's so many years we haven't audited, and auditors are very professional, like to be able to go back and see all the information and test it. Because we've got so many layers or so many years worth of information that hasn't been audited, they need to do a lot more testing to get that assurance.
So you mean that if, I don't know, a company has a disclaimed audit at 1 year, 10 years later it's still disclaimed?
Right, so what we're trying to do is build back that assurance. So we are
okay.
Intention.
Yeah, but I think you're doing a great job.
Oh.
So it just, I wonder why it's planned to be not good.
We can't, we don't have the resource to complete all the audits, capture work in a year, sadly. So
okay.
We are producing accounts, which is great, but just auditing that one set is no longer what we're doing. We'll have to go back further. If we just do that one set, that might be more valuable for us. But we're not. We have to test all those previous ones to get back to that level of assurance.
Yeah. I'm just wonder if you can't, if you don't have the right figures, can't you presume something? I think in private companies they're doing that.
Just to comment, so I'm Andy Reid from Rosette with the external auditors. So, as Chris says, the position the council is now in is at the end of this financial year, it's the fourth year that there's been this claim audit in. So, we've started the process of rebuilding assurance, but that does involve going back and redoing all audits.
All the 4 years?
Yeah.
So, what did the auditor previously what did the auditor previously do?
They issued us a challenging value for money, which we disputed, and we got some reductions in audit fees.
So they haven't done a good job?
Well, I wouldn't say that.
Oh, I know what you mean.
It's a case of we couldn't prepare all the materials in the time that they needed to do it, and the amount of work needed to be done before they finished their contract with us.
Okay.
So that's why we've got that challenge to be able to done a lot of work. Since the cause of the accounts for, we're going to need a lot more people to catch up these audits if we're going to do it for LGI.
How many people would you need?
Oh, as many as I could possibly.
No, but
seriously, I mean, probably we carry so many vacancies, so I'd like to fill those.
3, 4.
I'd like more than 4 realistically, why not? Because we've got 2 senior ones at the MIT. We've got 1 where we're returning the notice. We've got other vacancies in the team, so we've got enough vacancies to take those 4 until we start monitoring again. And then if I want to catch up with quality of work, I probably need another 3 or 4. So
okay. So you would like more people in your team.
Yes.
The problem, we know the problem, you know, recruitment
and a lot of people.
Money you offer is not enough.
No.
Can we do something about the council about that?
So this is a really difficult area for us. Our pay is controlled by the Green Book and the pay scales. We test our jobs against job evaluation. So we don't have the freedom. We can look at market forces supplements in some areas. But again, it's quite a high bar to test against that and to demonstrate it. And even if we do, we're still going to be paying an awful lot less than most other people. It is really difficult. There aren't accountants coming through the ranks anymore.
And agencies?
We do our best with those. We have a lot of agency around. Quality can be very variable. We've got some fantastic ones at the moment, and they've done some great work.
Okay.
And we hold on to them as best we can. But they're also extremely expensive. But they are very necessary.
So, what do we need then? Because
so then we have these meetings, the leadership team and amongst yourselves, where we try to prioritise those things we don't want to fall over,
yeah.
And we go with those as best we can. We look at the auditors to try and do bits of the reset. But LGR has made it very, very difficult for us in that we never thought we'd do it 2 years. That was never our intention to do it 2 years. It's going to be a multi-year thing. But LGR is going to not only make it short of time scale, but it sucks the life out of my team because I'm going to have to read a book. I'm spending more and more time on LGR work. Others in my team are going to be starting to do that to support that work stream.
Ralph, you.
Thank you very much, Jim. I mean, I was going to say, we've got the money. We've got the money to pay.
Yeah, of course. That's why I'm always thinking.
But we can't get the bodies.
And
it's being compounded by the problems of local government organisation. Because coming to work for a district council is now not necessarily a career enhancing move.
Yeah.
People will be looking elsewhere and thinking in the future.
Yeah, but if they come from agencies, they don't care.
That's true. Yeah. As their agency, they get paid a hefty multiple of what we get paid. Mm-hmm. So they're quite content to do that. It's just, again, the calibre of them is very different. And even agencies is a competitive space. We can't pay what large
agencies
can.
Yeah.
It's a real shame. I wish I had a solution.
The only other question I have is, we've got supposedly a lot of job vacancies, high unemployment, and we can't recruit people. I mean, do we have to have specific qualifications? I was going to say, I know when I worked in private industry, they've got to employ unqualified people who could do the job, and pay them less, to be honest with you. I just wondered if we're setting the bar for specific qualification that maybe we didn't necessarily need.
So we can, but on lower tier, we can recruit to a bit more easily.
Yeah.
So there is a more buoyant market there. It's the specialist level around Evan and myself, below what we need. Those ones you do need to be extremely qualified. You need local government experience. You need to understand the legislation. It's incredibly complicated. And spending time looking at the asset valuation stuff, it's not even like it's transferable from the private sector. What we do makes, I'm not knocking it, but it makes very little sense. We spend a lot of time doing technical exercises in the background to make us comparable to the private sector, even though we're clearly not. It's a huge thing. They're the kind of people we need, and we compete with the audit firms and everybody else for the same. It's a very small crunch of people. And I can't offer private healthcare or bonuses or cars or leases or training programs or a hefty salary. I can't compete. Can't offer the offices or the city spaces. That's where it's difficult. But we keep trying, and we have one trainee in the team. But to make a council, it takes 5 to 7 years really until they're up and running.
Okay. Right, okay, I think we've.
A brief comment on that. So, within the ZETS, we have something like 30 local government clients, and around 2/3 of those are effectively in the same position as the Stafford Borough, where they've got a backlog of disclaimed accounts, and they're all struggling to recruit capacity to recover from that. So, this has been recognised as a national issue. There's been quite a lot of work in the line of strategy nationally. So, Stafford is absolutely not alone in this.
Right, members, recommendations, if you look on page 3, 2-1, so note the statement of accounts. Is everyone happy?
Yes.
You can't do the next one because we haven't done it yet. Note the impact of the audit backlog legislation.
Yes.
Everyone happy? Okay, I'll move on then.
Sorry, Chair, there's a second part.
Yeah. Approve the management representation letter. Is everyone happy that I sign that off?
Yes.
I thought you would be.
We'll do it after. We'll do it again.
Yeah, well, I want to see his chequebook. Right, okay. Right, moving on then to the item 3B, Stafford Borough Council Audit Completion Report.
Page 92, Chair.
92, please.
If I can just give an overview of this report. So we've already touched on some of the points raised on this, but this is the formal reporting that we're required to bring to the committee as part of the audit completion process. We knew, I think, quite early this year that we would be in a position where we'd be disclaiming the accounts and in a position, just to summarise, that we were in. So, as a took the responsibility for the Stafford Borough Council audit last year for 23-24, when we took it over, the previous 2 years had already been disclaimed by the previous auditors. We had limited scope to do much work last year. I think this year we've been able to make a lot more progress on the audit. We've done a considerable amount of work. We've assessed the process needed, and then we build an assurance in line with various national guidance we've been issued, and we have now started that process. But it does involve effectively going back and testing each year, each previous year, so going back to the 21-22 financial year. But we have started that process. That much of the report that we present on here summarises the areas that we focused on as part of that process for this year. As Chris said, it will take some time to do that, but things like income expenditure balance testing will be to issue the majority of the samples that we need to issue. We'll be working with Emma and the rest of the finance team over the coming months to progress those, and then as part of the 25-26 audit, we'll be able to take stock and just assess, you know, how much more there is to do to rebuild assurance and what remaining timescale we'll be looking at for that. It is a considerable amount of work involved, but I think we have made significant progress, and so a few thanks to Chris and Emma for that. Recognising that the council has a limited capacity, I think we've had really good engagement this year. I know that some funds can be brought in and can be specifically to support the audit process. So I think much of our report just goes through the detail of what our approach has been to just assessing the approach needed for rebuilding assurance, the areas of work we've been able to complete, areas we've started on for this year. As I say, I think we have made considerable progress, but it's still a disclaimed audit. I think that another key area that I just want to draw out is this also comments on our value for money assessment. So, again, as Chris has mentioned, the previous auditors, when their report is issued, auditors and reports for 2023, I think, reported on 5 significant weaknesses in Stafford Borough, which covered areas such as governance, financial sustainability, procurement, contract management arrangements. We've carried out an assessment for 24-25. We've concluded that 3 of those previous significant weaknesses no longer apply, so effectively we're saying that enough progress has been made to lift 3 of those. Okay. And that relates to financial sustainability, IT controls, and procurement arrangements. We are saying though that there's 2 of the previous reported significant weaknesses were still in place for 24-25. The first one relates to, as we've said, capacity of the finance team, ability to produce annual accounts and in-year financial reporting. Although again, I think things have improved there, but our assessment for 24-25 is that not to the extent that we can remove that significant weakness. And then the other one was counter-fraud arrangements, where I think a lot of progress has been made, but there's still key actions needed around particularly updating the counter-fraud policies and whistleblowing policy, which I think are now something like 2014 that was updated. So there's a few specific points there. But I think overall though, it is really positive that we've been able to remove a number of significant weaknesses that were previously reported in the past.
So with those 2 that are left, what progress are we making on those 2?
So I think the counter-fraud one, it is just a case of updating the public policies and procedures.
Right.
And I think there are plans in place to do that in the near future. And then the other one, I'd say, it's financing capacity, which is
kind or anything about. Yeah, okay. Any questions to the auditors?
I have a question. I can't remember where it was, but I it was. It's about the finance team was not enough, but you say at some point that the audit team wasn't enough as well, so.
Yeah, well, I think. As I say, we took over responsibility for the audit 23-24. I think, yeah, in the first year of the audit, we struggled with just a transfer on both sides and to progress the audit. I think we have to recognise as well that as an audit supplier, so as I said, something like two-thirds of our audit clients have got disclaimed opinions. The level of work we need to do to rebuild assurance was never envisaged when we took over the contract, so we do have limited capacity as well to rebuild assurance. We are working with all of our clients to progress this as quickly as possible, but there are constraints on audit capacity as well to do this. But having said that, so we'll be working with all of our clients to come up with, based on the progress we've made in the current year, to then come up with a realistic plan as to how we think the remaining rebuilding assurance process will work in the current time.
Yeah, I've got another question about the fraud. Did you have any evidence from the previous auditor that there were fraud or not anymore?
So the, when we've looked at the fraud arrangements, all we assess is the arrangements and policies and procedures in place.
Okay, so it's not.
So what we're not actually looking at. I mean, we're not aware of any significant material fraud. The main focus of our assessment. Yeah, yeah, we're not really commenting on whether there have been particular problems or not. It's the policies and procedures.
I've got another question about it's on page 31. The value of the land and building here contains 65 million. So, what's the majority of them? Do you know? Or
so we've been having discussions with them actually around. So for the current year, the council has an external valuation done. We've started going through that and just assessing how we can effectively test that valuation.
Okay, it was external.
It was an external valuation that was done. I mean, the main assets is things like leisure centres and
so it's not the land, it's just buildings, some buildings.
Through you, Chair, so the asset register, the values in there are effectively all the assets of the council. So the civic centre, it's the land, the buildings, the investment properties, the equipment, it's everything.
Yeah, but the majority is leisure centre.
So you've got leisure centre, car park, civic centre.
Okay. Yeah. Civic centre is in it.
Yes.
Okay.
Chris?
Just on the fraud policies, they're currently making their way through the reporting cycle. Judy's completed those. The printed leadership team will be coming through to members shortly.
Okay.
Sorry, I didn't catch it.
Oh, sorry. The fraud policies that we referred to?
Yes.
Not, they've been done now.
Okay.
It's not part of this.
Okay.
The printed leadership team will be coming through the reporting cycle shortly.
I was going to ask you, when we sit here next year, how confident are you, or how far further forward are we going to be with the backlog?
Yeah, well, I think we probably need to sit down with Chris and Emma to say, once we've got this year out of the way, just take stock of what progress we've made. Our ambition for all of our clients is to catch up on all of the previous year's I&E testing by the end of next year. Realistic or not, that's possible.
I'll just write that down.
That is our ambition. And also, we're hoping that we get up to date on key areas of like the asset valuation,
which is
probably a key part of the balance sheet. So, again, we'll be focusing on that. So, there are certain areas like that that we're really aiming to effectively be able to complete by the end of next year's audit. I think that at the moment, there's a lot of unknown factors as to whether that will be possible, chiefly financing capacity or audit capacity. start actually getting into some of the detail of this prior year testing, particularly when we're looking back at information that's sometimes 2 or 3 years old now. We never quite know how straightforward the audit process is going to be. So I think there are some caveats around that, but that is what would be, that's what we'd be aiming
for. Okay.
I think through you, Chair, it's important to understand that when we say samples, we're talking hundreds of samples.
Yeah,
like 400, you know.
That's the reason I asked the question, because I knew, I know what the workload's going to be.
And as Emma says, we knew that this would be a significant undertaking, you know, effectively doing testing on 4 years' worth of transactions in one go was always going to be a significant undertaking. So,
I understand there's 24 hours in each day as well. Okay,
I've got another question about the audit adjustment. You say as a result we have also not identified audit adjustments arising from this work. What were the latest proposed adjustments?
So the level of work we've been able to complete for this year, although we've made significant progress in quite a few areas, it's not actually got to the stage where we would definitively claim that any adjustments needed to be made to the accounts as presented. So there was no specific amendments identified.
Okay. I've got a final question. We have LGR. So normally in 2 years' time, no more staff on the road. But just in case it's delayed, what do you think will happen with the accounts and the audit?
Yeah, well, the ideal that we're trying to work towards with all of our clients is to get to a position where we can effectively get a clear audit by 2028 or so.
So it should be okay.
Whether that's, I think there's big question marks on whether that would be possible. If we can't give a clean audit opinion, the other alternative is, can we at least get to a position where we can give some kind of assurance on the closing and balance sheet position? Because that,
yes, and also you can have, I don't know what the term is used, but some parts where you say yes, it's fine, and some parts you say sorry, we can't.
Yeah, I think probably the view at the moment is, as I say, ideally we'd like to move to a position where we can completely give a completely clean opinion. I think there will be some bodies where that's just not possible. So in those circumstances, we'll then look at what level of things can we actually give. And I think there will be a situation where we can give positive assurance on certain key figures.
Okay, if I could just go back to the recommendation, so it's...
Sorry, Chairman, the report be received for this one.
Just
received? Yeah, you're back on 3A there, just be received, please.
Received, okay. Moving on then to item 3, Charlie, Annual Treasury Management Report, starting on page 152.
This is the annual treasury outcome report for 24-25. I'm going to draw everyone's attention to certain paragraphs within it, but I'm happy to take questions as well. So page 156, paragraph 5.12.1 sets out our investment cash at the end of 31st March 25. So we have 66.6 million, and it shows you the comparative interest rate we have. It's just a snapshot in time, but it can be interesting. Page 161, paragraph 5.26 sets out the level of resources comparatively from 31st March 24 to 31st March 25. And 5.27 shows that we earned an average annual rate of return of 4.9% for last year, and total investment income was higher than our anticipated revised budget, mainly due to the fact that the interest rates stayed higher as long as we thought, and we had more cash balances than expected. Page 164 shows we complied with the indicators. The CFR is slightly higher the estimate for 24-25, that's in relation to some waste leases which we brought in on stream. So effectively the rules say that if you use the vehicles in the, if you consume their life within the whole of the contract, you have to put them on the balance sheet. So we just reflected more on the balance sheet than we anticipated. So there isn't anything else that I've got for the 24-25, but I'm happy to take any questions.
Any questions from the floor? No? Okay, we're asked to note the annual Treasury Management Report and to approve the actual 24-25 prudential and Treasury indicators set out in the annex. Is everyone happy?
Yeah.
So noted?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much indeed. Moving on then to the mid-year report, page 166.
Mid-year report following on from the Treasury strategy that you approved last February. So I wanted to draw members' attention again to various pages. So page 169, paragraph 5.7, that gives you the limit. So we had higher provisional prudential indicators than we're now proposing. Essentially, that was because at the point we wrote the Treasury strategy, we thought we wouldn't potentially need to borrow from the Civic Centre. We haven't needed to borrow, so therefore we've reduced the indicator down the board. Page 170, paragraph 5.9, this shows the revised budgets in terms of the capital expenditure. Because we were taking this to the February meeting, we reflected the same figures in here that we had within the capital budget, so that's why that those are at that February. But we thought that was better than having two different sets of figures to use. Paragraph 5.9 sets out the revised position. Essentially, the large increase from the 11 million to the 41 million is effectively 20.8 million, nearly, is the Civic Centre, reflecting the fact that we've included that, and that was approved early. Moving on to the next page, paragraph 5.11. Well, table 3 sets out the how that program's been financed, and then 5.11 sets out the CFR. There is a reduction in the CFR, and that's because the Civic Centre lease was on balance sheet, and because we purchased it, that lease will be renewed as part of 25-26. On page 179, it just sets out that we had 62.67 million in investments at the 30th of September 2025. Again, snapshot. And then on page 179, that just tells you where our investments were. And as you can see from that compared to the 24-25 outturn, the rates were already going down.
At this point. And there's nothing else I want to bring to them's attention if there's any questions. Do the grants we get from the government for regeneration, do we get the money, and if we haven't spent it, it goes into our investments, and we only get the money as we ask for it, as we use it?
So they have paid, I believe they've paid all of the money to Stafford now, so they pay. There isn't really a set payment plan. They do it in terms of the monetary returns. They have now paid all the future high speeds money over. So, and all our treasury investments obviously are based on our cash balances held. So if there's a timing delay between having the money and spending it, then we will get the return on that money, which can go into our interval effectively.
Any further questions? No, we are. Recommendation is to note the report. Is it so noted?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much indeed. Moving on to the final one, which is on page 182, Treasury Management Strategy.
Okay, this is your Treasury Management Strategy for 26-27. Again, I'll warn members through specific pages, and if you've got queries, then give them that note. So we're going to look at the page 187. I just want to draw members' are conscious that this hasn't happened, and we've approached our new Treasury advisors to say, can they deliver some training to members? So that is definitely business programming. Page 191 and 192 sets out the capital programme and the finances over the next period. Again, this is based on the budget that went to as you can see, there's no borrowing need in terms of it's a fully financed programme over the last. Page 193, the CFR and paragraph 5.48. Just to draw your attention, in 26-27 we are reflecting an increase in the CFR. That's primarily bringing on the food waste vehicles that need to be reflected within the accounts, and then we've put a small amount in for other IFRS leases that might need to come on stream. Page 196 sets out where we think our balances are going to be, so it gives us an idea about what our level of spare resource is going to be for investment. So again, referring to Jeffrey's question earlier, obviously our cash balances are coming down because we think we're going to spend some of that money, so it won't be available for investment. And this is kind of like our forward plans for that. Page 200, paragraph 5.69. In here, it breaks down the external debt. What we need to bear in mind is it also includes finance leases. Obviously, we've already got provisions for those within our payments, because effectively they're embedded in what we pay. But they are included in your other long-term facilities, so there is no actual borrowing for the council. It's just the page 201 gives you the operational boundary and the authorised limit, as we referenced earlier in the report. And then page 206 in paragraph 5.91, this sets out who we can invest in. And this is slightly different than the members would have seen before. Mm-hmm. So the time limits that there are set out are the maximum. So that isn't what we're investing for. This is just the maximum that you are, that people could potentially invest for. But obviously they're trying to make sure that with all our investments that the security and the risk is the most important bit for us to make sure it's secure as an investment. And then the next few paragraphs set out what the different things are that we could invest in. So there's slightly more in here than has been there previously,
yeah.
But ultimately we're still going to be that actually it's security of the investment that's most important to us as the council, rather than trying to do things that we don't know we look about. Page 213, on paragraph 5.124, this shows that we think our investment income is going to be 1.867, and we think the interest rate potentially average will go down to 2.78. Obviously, that might turn out higher, but at this point, that was our best estimate. There wasn't anything else I wanted to draw members' attention to, so I'm happy to take any questions.
Any questions? Yeah.
5.106 on page 209 talks about reputational risks of investments. I'd be interested in kind of understanding more about how the decision of whether or not, how we decide whether an investment might be a reputational risk, because I think there would be a range of views from different people as to whether or not it was a reputational risk or not, and how much stock we should put in whether or not that might be a risk to our reputation, depending on what those investments were.
I think what we're really saying is if we're investing in the money market funds and we're doing other things, then that's okay. If we're looking at something else, it's about making sure that does it fit with the ethos. Is it something that fundamentally doesn't feel quite right? So it's more about
it's the doesn't quite feel right is what I'd like to know more about. Because that's very woolly.
So essentially for us, I think that we're not going to really change from our current investment strategy. At the end of the day, it's about being transparent, it's about our being secure, it's making sure that we invest in things that are more routine and safe.
We have a relatively passive strategy. We invest in money market funds, we go to the mainline banks. We don't have a team that's out there picking funds or shares or investments, so it's not like we're suddenly going to be buying defence stocks or anything like that, which would be very easy and very visible. But us, we invest in these large scale funds that keep us safe, protect us and do professional investment. What they do on the back end is harder for us to say, and we would never be able to identify that. It's just the sheer scale of them, things like BlackRock or what have you. They chop it into lots of little bits, we'd never see it. So what we do, if we go to ones that protect our money, have a good reputation financially, and aren't really tied to anything crazy things that haven't happened in the sector. So we don't do much with things like Barclays, because they have. So there's certain ones we wouldn't necessarily go along with, but other ones we try to be down with.
Happy?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, any further questions? No? Okay, we are asked to approve the following: prudential and treasury indicators, the annual minimum revenue provision, and the treasury management's policy and annual investment strategy. Is everyone happy?
Yeah.
Okay, so noted. To finish, I'd like to, I think on behalf of the team, to thank the financial team for all their hard work. Just to remind you, there are 24 hours in a day. And also to the external auditors for all your hard work. And I appreciate what's coming up. And I also appreciate that when I sit here next year, you're going to say, all done. Okay, with that, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much indeed. I'll call the meeting to a close.